Welcome to this week's episode of Straggler Adventures, where we introduce you to really cool people who do really cool things. We're not your parents' middle agers, reminding us that you don't have to be first to be the greatest, and it's never too late to live your best life. Welcome back to this week's episode of Straggler Adventures. We are joined today by Angela Lee, and we are so excited. She has so much to offer, and it's different than the people we've talked to so far. So I'm going to let Angela introduce herself.
Well, hi, I'm so excited to be here. I've been thinking since you asked me to be on the show the other day, what talk about, because I kind of feel like all over the place, because I want to do a little bit of everything when it comes to adventures, which I know you can relate to, Shauna. So I kind of dialed it back down to where we met, which was through the From Fat to Finish Line group. And I realized that kind of indirectly through From Fat to Finish Line, I've personally been able to like overcome all of my fears, which I did through community, starting with the From Fat to Finish Line community. And that has opened up a life of adventure for me.
And can you share what From Fat to Finish Line is with our audience?
Okay. So From Fat to Finish Line at its core is a documentary film I directed. We filmed it in 2012 and 2013. It started with my dear friend and producing partner, Jennifer Rowe, who was trying to make some changes in her life and watched me on Facebook run a half marathon that I wasn't really trained for. So I spent a lot of time stopping and taking pictures and posting them on Facebook. And she was having a moment where she was trying to lose some baby weight and reading a Jack Canfield book. And so without even knowing anything about running, she registered for a marathon.
Those are my kind of people.
Yeah, right? It's amazing. And so she started a blog for accountability called From Fat to Finish Line. It became this great group of people. And one of the people following her blog had an idea to run a Ragnar relay race with 12 runners who had all lost like an average of 100 pounds through running. And she was invited to be on that team. And because we're filmmakers, she told me about it. And her first thought was, should we make a movie about it? Because we had sworn off documentary filmmaking because it's a labor of love, but we were both going broke doing it. But of course, we thought, yes, we need to make it. So we did. When we were filming it, I think half of the people were bloggers. There was social media posts and stuff about us filming this movie. The Today Show got wind of it. And so they actually came to Florida. It was the last Florida Keys Ragnar in January of 2013. And they came and followed us as we filmed the race. There was lots of word on the street about the movie before I'd even looked at the first piece of footage. Team captain wanted to, he was getting questions on Facebook. And so he started first a page and then a group. By the time we actually premiered, the first showing we had of the movie was actually in Las Vegas at the Rock and Roll Marathon in 2015, it was a rough cut of the movie. Netflix did a 3-year exclusive licensing deal so it was on Netflix from 2016 to 2019. But the most amazing thing that really came from it is it completely changed my life. I hate to say that not training for that race was the best thing I ever did.
You probably didn't think that the day after the race when you couldn't get up off the toilet, right?
No.
Hindsight.
Because it just opened a world of opportunities for me. One of the people on the team was Jennifer Small, who was a triathlete. All I knew about triathlon was that the Los Angeles Triathlon went past my house every year and I would forget about it. And they'd close down the two major cross streets from my house. And so I would just be mad because I couldn't get anywhere. It was really fun a few years later to actually ride that bike course. You can go from the beach to downtown faster than you could at 2 o'clock in the morning in a car because you can run all the lights and everything. I'm standing on the shore of Maine on the beach. So the sun is rising over the ocean. All of these people in wetsuits just run out into the ocean and they're, doing the dolphin dives. And I'm standing there with the camera on my shoulder next to Jennifer. And I was I got this feeling in my chest that could have only been what eat your heart out means, because I just got this feeling in my chest. And I don't know the last time I'd done any swimming. And I, you know, later found out I didn't really know how to swim. But anyway, I just watched them going out there. I was like, oh my God, that's so amazing. I want to do that. And Jennifer started laughing. And she said, I was just thinking that they look like they're the most crazy people I've ever seen in my life. They're both true, right? I think they're both true. So in addition to making the movie, I actually decided I wanted to become a triathlete. And that led to open water swimming, becoming a coach, and becoming a support kayaker for marathon swimmers. I have helped over 100 people complete marathon swims from either being on their crew or kayaking next to them, being an observer. It took me, from watching those first swimmers go out into the ocean, it took me 4 years to get over my fear of the open water. And now you can drop me off the back of a boat in the middle of the Catalina Channel at 2 o'clock in the morning and I'm okay.
I won't even swim in one of the Great Lakes for a triathlon. That is really scary to me. I have, which is why I won't do it again. So for you, what you do in the pool, in the ocean, is just so cool. And you have the coolest stories of things that have happened through all of that. I mean, you just have...
It all comes back to community, though. You know, like when I decided I wanted to become a triathlete, I would have 100% just survived the swim on the first ocean one I did, which was the Malibu Triathlon, the first Olympic. I did a couple of sprints. I dog paddled the 400 meters in Hermosa on the first one. I would have just survived the swim. But the community, these people that I started swimming with on Saturday morning, I just wanted to hang out with them more. That's how I slowly but surely overcame my fear. When the pandemic hit and the gyms were closed and I was riding my bike around LA, I live in like midtown Los Angeles, and I was riding my bike and I thought like, woohoo, the streets are empty, right? I rode past Cedars-Sinai Hospital and I saw the parking lot, which was, you know, a makeshift COVID unit. Everybody out there, and it occurred to me, was like, ooh, what if I forget to clip out and fall over and break my arm? How am I going to get medical help? This is really stupid, right? Like, it might even be worse riding around LA when the streets are open. The only thing really safe to do was go to the beach. You know, we would plop our stuff down. We'd be 6 feet apart from each other. We'd get out in the ocean. And out there, things kind of felt normal. You forgot about what was happening.
The pandemic, the COVID for a little while when everything, with everything locked down. I get that feeling.
So I just embraced swimming basically in 2020. If you would have told me in 2019 that I was going to get bit by a sea lion on a training swim, and then 2.5 weeks later, swim from Anacapa Island in the Channel Islands to Oxnard, I would have told you you're a fat ass crazy.
What is the furthest that you have swam?
So that was the furthest swim I did. It's as the crow fly, 12-ish miles, I think. So that's what you get credit for. I've done 2 marathon swims that were 12 miles. You get credit for that, but that one is very current-y. And so my Garmin that you're not allowed to wear, but my friend on my crew person on the boat was wearing it, said 14 miles.
So the current took you an extra 2 miles to make it.
Yeah, like it's a curve. And it's the same thing with the English Channel. Like it's a 21-mile swim, but nobody, well, one guy swam a straight line.
Yeah.
Recently. And he hit the world record.
That makes it was straight.
He was able
to navigate that.
Yeah. And just for context, and like the normal pool that you find at like the Y or whatever, 33 laps equals 1 mile. Just for context, for those of you thinking about how far that swim is.
It's an amazing amount. Like even when you do your half triathlon, when you were doing your half triathlon, the 1.2 miles, I would never do that. swimming 12 miles. I agree with you. That's crazy. I would never think to get in the water and be like, hey, I'm going to swim 12 miles today.
In marathons, in the marathon swimming world, that's a baby swim also, which is kind of mind blowing to me.
Like, yeah. It's in the ocean. The waves are in the ocean. And also, like, fish and stuff. But the waves, like, it just blows my mind. That is so cool.
It's pretty amazing, though. Once you get over it. So I personally always have what I believe is a healthy fear of it. Every time I get in, there's a little bit of anxiety. I think that if you aren't worried, that that's not good, right? But your chances, my brother always likes to say that you have a greater chance of being killed by a vending machine than a shark. Where I live, you know, like I would never go and swim like the South African. There's a South African channel that Lynn Cox swam, and most people do it in shark cages. I guess that they just like the boats drag this big cage and you swim in the cage. I would never do that. I'm not trying to get killed. At the Santa Barbara Channel banquet this year, they honored the woman and she spoke about this Farallon Island. I believe it's the Farallon Islands in San Francisco, which is where the sharks are up there. And she did that swim solo. That's crazy. You know, I don't have any desire to be where the big sharks are. We do have juvenile sharks. I have seen a shadow of one swim under me before. I didn't really realize what it was until it was gone. And I looked at my brother, who was also swimming in the group, and I was like, that was a giant dolphin. And he's like, no, that was not a dolphin. And then I've seen a couple little ones from the kayak when other people were swimming. And I will say, every time I see one, I'm less and less afraid of them because they really pay us no mind. You know, so I'm less bothered by them every time I see them. I'm more worried about the jellyfish stings and, you know, I've been working on getting over my fear of sea lions because generally they're fine. You know, I was bit during a time where they had some toxicity in the water that was making them a little crazy. And I had to get right back on the horse because my big swim that I paid a lot of money for already was in 2.5 weeks. I had to put Tegaderm over the stitches. And as soon as, you know, a couple days when I got the feeling back in my hand, I had to just get back in the water, which I'm kind of thankful for because I feel like I probably might have been, you know, more trepidatious if I didn't have to do that.
Yeah. I think some of that, like you said before, like some of the facing of the fears like that, like, you know, like not like your heightened awareness of everything, you know, you know about it, but you also know that it's a little scary and you,
right.
I appreciate that. I get that all the time. Like sometimes you just got to be like, well, it's scary. I'm going to go do it anyways.
Because I think my chances of getting bitten again once that toxicity was over was pretty slim.
Right. I don't know what the odds are of getting bit by a sea lion twice is, but it's probably lower than getting hit by a vending machine.
100%. From that, I actually started kayaking for a friend. I have to say, it started by me supporting my friend who was swimming the Catalina Channel and me thinking she was crazy. And then the more you sit on that kayak and watch people do the swim, the more inspired you get. I kayak much more than I swim right now because I've realized that because I learned how to propel myself forward in water when I was 47, I'm not a very efficient swimmer. I can swim for a really long time, but I needed to stop and unlearn everything and go back to square one and learn how to actually swim efficiently if I'm going to swim Catalina, which I had originally thought of doing for my 60th birthday last year. But then after swimming the 14-mile, the 12/14-mile swim, I was like, oh, I can't do twice this unless I'm a better swimmer. I just spent a couple of years helping other swimmers, which, you know, I got to go to England last summer and support my coach when she swam the English Channel, which was amazing. Wow, amazing. That's an insane swim. I've seen all these places that people swim all around the world, places that I had never thought of going before. But I feel like my third act, as I'm calling it, is going to be in a lot of exotic water. and not like floating around in Cancun, right? It's going to be, but it's all community. You know, I wanted to hang out with that community, and that community embraced me and embraced my fears. And, you know, there was two Olympians in the group and then scared people. So I think that, you know, at the end of the day, I think it boils down to getting over your insecurities and being willing to just go for it. Like you were saying, you know, you won't get a yes if you don't ask, right?
You just got to say yes. And sometimes you look before you leap, and you leap before you look, and you do things like you did. You just swim 15 miles or 14 miles for fun.
Also, I hear a lot, and I see a lot of people, especially in different community groups, like the town where we live in, community group type things, right? Or different female groups and just random different groups. And people say, how do you meet friends? I don't know how to meet friends at this stage of my life, because, you know, for a lot of people, their friends are their kids' friends' family. And then when their kids grow up, how do you develop that community? And I love the idea of you just saw the community first and said, I want to be a part of that. Yeah. I found from Fat to Finish Line, because I'm not going to talk about my journey, but I had this journey of literally being from fat to finish line. And I started with triathlon because I just said, I want to be an athlete. And what's the one thing that only athletes can do? And in my mind, that was always triathlon. So I was like, great, I'm over 400 pounds. I'm going to sign up for a triathlon and figure out how to do it in the next 5 months. That's what I did. And so I am clearly someone who just jumps in, did not think I was going to fall in love with it as much as I did, because running was my nemesis. And now I love running more than anything else. But that's how I found the group. Was I was, you know, single mom. I couldn't go out and find community like that. As a mom with a kid with some special needs, it just wasn't practical. And so I was probably just scrolling through Netflix and saw this and was like, let's see what it's about. And I reached out, because you had already formed that community. It was, yeah, I want to be a part of that. I mean, really, that documentary led me to you and the group, who I absolutely adore, that changed my perception of what an athlete can be. I started out trying to prove a point, because my kid was very self-conscious about her body. And I said, well, I am too. And I need to show her that your body shape doesn't define who you are, which is why I said, what shouldn't I do at my size? Triathlete. So I did. So you were already forming that community when I had found you. And it worked so well for me because it was online community. And then it inspired me to do longer distances. And then I started doing the half marathons and, you know, all of that. There's just so many different ways to find your community. And like you said, you just saw people there. You're like, I want to be a part of that. And that there are ways to connect if you're willing to kind of open up your idea of what you think your community needs to look like, and that it does change.
I don't think I would have had the guts, though, to do that if it hadn't been for From Fat to Finish Line and that community, because I had spent my, you know, corporate career in the entertainment industry, which is very cutthroat and very, you know, your friends are kind of, you know, like air quote friends, although Jennifer is one of the exceptions. We've been, you know, we've remained close friends. And through, you know, my best friends right now, I met in the From Fat to Finish Line group. And it started out online, but, you know, I mean, Terry moved here to LA to be closer to me. You know, we would travel around and meet to do the Ragnar races all the time, you know, in the early days before the pandemic, I guess the before times, you know, that really changed the dynamics of my life entirely. I would be like miserable sitting behind a desk at one of the studios. If I'm lucky, I might've been fired by now for being too old. You know, that's where I've started this coaching group. And so I got certified. So I had this like deep need for information. When I first started doing triathlon, I had a couple of triathlon coaches, and they were always giving me information, and I'd say, why do I need to do that? Why do I need to do that? And I they couldn't really explain it to me in a way that made sense to me. And so I thought, well, I'm just going to take the class and get certified as a triathlon coach. So I've been certified for 7 years now, but never for it to be a career. And then I got certified as a running coach during the pandemic. And then I went through menopause and I just like gained a bunch of weight and I didn't feel good and things were wrong. And so I took the NASM nutrition certification. I just want to know, and I can't find someone to explain it to me properly, but I've always had this kind of imposter syndrome about helping other people. And last year through my, you know, I became an assistant coach at a local triathlon club. Then through my swim coach, I helped a lifeguard pass the lifeguard test for the run portion of her test. These were, you know, super fit young people. A bunch of people wanted to hire me, and it kind of helped me get over my imposter syndrome and think, you know, I do have value and this would be really fun because then I could travel around all these races as my job. And so instead of just kind of helping people for free all this time, I am beta testing the idea, you know, as there being a hybrid between hiring a coach, which is not only expensive, but it's also kind of isolating, I think, right? It's just you and this person telling you what to do.
Intimidating to think of this one-on-one coach and I'm going to let them down. Are they going to expect things from me that I'm not physically able to do? Are they going to meet me where I'm at? I mean, there's just, you know, not that you would do that, but it's a big step to decide to work with a coach.
It is. And I think that, you know, some of them are good at reading your metrics and letting you know when you need to take a break and when you don't. But I think that, you know, you could, like, I've seen the buy a plan, train with a group versus training with a group and kind of doing everything together and being on the same plan that's malleable. I think that it's, you know, it's something that needs to be pliable. And so I'm really hoping that it works out where you have a whole bunch of different people. Because again, it's the community, right? And we're all at different levels. We're at different ages. We're at different levels. How can me, who's 61 and coming off of a torn MCL and some bruised ribs, train at the same time as, you know, my friend Ada, who's 45 and really fast. But if we all learn how to adjust a plan for ourselves, I think it's kind of empowering the athlete to be making decisions and understanding why the plans are built in a certain way. Because I coached a few people through stuff until I figured out how to explain the why to them. They weren't necessarily always doing what they said. And I've realized right now that with some swimming, right? I'm kayaking for a friend of mine's, for my swim coach's client, who's a keto athlete. They're very adamant about the nutrition that worked for them on the ground. I think that, you know, when you're horizontal in the water, it's really, really different. I want to see them succeed. And I'm worried because you need carbs all the time, I believe, in endurance sports, but even more so in marathon swimming.
Got to fuel the body in different ways at that time.
And it's also a mental thing for those of us who have had weight issues our whole life, right? I think we also get hungrier more often. I find that a lot of us overfuel a little bit because we think we need it more or we want it more, maybe, right?
I will tell you from my perspective, especially if you have had any body image issues, the nutrition part is by far the hardest to master and to wrap your head around. For triggers for me with eating disorders is being too hungry and feeling too full. Thinking about, okay, I've got to fuel my body enough to get me through the next however many miles, but I can't feel too full because all I'm going to be thinking about is how full I am and feel like I'm 400 pounds. The nutrition part is so difficult. You can get running advice. You can get swimming advice. You know, you can find that online and you can find biking advice. But as far as working with a coach who could talk to you about your nutrition, and like you said, I'm kind of concerned that you're not going to do carbs. I don't know. That's just a whole different piece, but that it is really hard to balance. This is what my body needs. This is what my body needs to be able to function the best that it can.
All of the nutrition, I won't say all of the nutrition advice, but most of the nutrition advice and all of the products are formulated for these, you know, pros and elites who are, you know, redlining it, so to speak, right? Yeah. And so They are looking for something to go from your mouth into glucose, into energy, and bypassing the digestive system, because when you digest, that pulls energy from your performance. Now, for me, when I'm running, you know, a 5.5 hour marathon, who cares, right? It might slow me down like a minute or two if I digest a little bit. And it won't spike my insulin, and it won't do all these crazy things that are going to mess up my metabolic health. It's just the whole kind of candy and eating this and eating that kind of thing. And for me, it's like 6 hours. I can't eat too much sugar. My stomach rejects it. But also, you know, if I'm exercising for over 6 hours, my stomach also goes on strike. For a half Ironman or for a marathon swim, you know, that causes me problems in the final few hours, fueling and endurance. And that's all part of the same adventure world, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
it's a big part. I know when helping Shauna on her Ironman thing, we talked about where the fuel was going to come from and where to get it at, how to store it, what we needed to take with us the night before, how to prepare it and keep it usable for the next day, all that type of stuff. That was a random insight to the world I had no idea about.
Let's put it that way. So many moving pieces to everything. Like, I was listening to your episode with the canoe guy, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I thought, wow, like just anything that's kind of new and exciting, like you learn so many things as you go along.
It's cool when it happens and it all comes together and you feel it and you accomplish something. You're like, hey, look, I did it.
Honestly, when you cross the finish line, no matter whatever your finish line is for whatever activity you pick, when you get to a finish line and you cross that and you realize nobody can ever take that away from you.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
That's yours. It's yours. You did that. And Rick, who is also part of From Fat to Finish Line, I love this. He said this one time years ago, and I never forgot it. He said, the race is the victory lap to all of your training.
I mean, I remember in the movie, he said, like, when he crossed that first finish line, that was the time he realized that he was never going to be fat again, because he had so much joy and realized that this was his new normal.
What inspires you to keep going when you don't feel like it?
I do have setbacks. I don't always keep going. I get back, of course. You know, and I've had some injuries, kind of debilitating injuries. In 2013, October, I tore my MCL, like landing the kayak at a finish of a swim. And wow, like that, I couldn't even like move it without searing pain for probably 2 weeks, let alone walk or run. I'm just really starting to actually officially run again. I've, you know, done some fun stuff, but for the most part, what inspires me now is the fact that I'm old-ish. I'll say, you know, like chronologically, I don't think I am mentally. And when I say that kind of with some self-deprecating humor, because I just turned 61. My father lived to be 45 days shy of his 103rd birthday. So by his standards, I am young. I have plenty of time left, right? My mother, on the other hand, died a month and a half after, so about this, after her 70th birthday. In by those standards, the clock is ticking. And what I realized is that I can't not take care of myself now, because I'm not going to bounce back like I used to. When I, you know, I've had to like virtually completely stop drinking. I will occasionally have a glass of wine or a beer with friends, but that really doesn't make me feel good. I am currently attempting to cut out processed sugar almost entirely, because that inflames all my old injuries that I had from when I was a kid. So like all of these things that have kind of popped back up, and I guess, you have scar tissue that's just been like ruminating for all those years, or just normal life even is just, you know, kind of exacerbating. A little bit of inflammation is exacerbating my ankle throughout the years. And then one day it just swelled up like a balloon while I was running. And so I just think that I need to keep going and be really, really diligent about stuff, because I'd rather have, what is Peter Attia, who I'm a big fan of, he calls it health span, not lifespan. I would like to be 90 and still able to run a 5K. You know, I don't have to run a marathon when I'm 90, but I want to be able to bring my groceries upstairs. And, you know, like I live in the top floor of a duplex, and if I decide to still live here, I have to get up and down the stairs on a regular basis a few times a day, you know? And I just think that that's, you know, that's really what I want my main goal to be. You know, my next goal is the Marine Corps Marathon. So I'll say for me, it's probably a pretty safe goal because it has a 6-hour cutoff. All but one of my 6 marathons have been under 6 hours. The one that wasn't, it was like 95 degrees. But the thing that's unique about this one is that I am training, and I don't have a time goal or anything in my head, but I'm, for the first time in my life, I'm actually doing proper training instead of just like putting in the miles and, you know, like looking at the surface. I think there's a surface level of training that's based on the scientific periodization, you know, build for a few weeks and recover, build for a few weeks and recover. Some say, oh, you hear this generic, like strength helps, right? But, you know, it's like, well, what kind of strength? And so I am getting certified by NASM in corrective exercise as a corrective exercise technician. And I'm really rolling in all of that into this plan that I'm writing, and I'm working with a group of other friends from most of them from Fat to Finish Line that we're running it together, trying to keep us all injury free. So the corrective exercise certification is really interesting because they're not, it's not kind of a rehab. That's what physical therapists are for, right? So this is basically trying to keep people healthy. And, or when somebody comes back off an injury and they're cleared to start exercising again, how do you do it without repeating the same injuries? Because a lot of injuries we get are from certain bad form. Like my running is terrible. I have terrible form. I'm a heel striker. I'm like, I get tired and I get lazy. And then I'm like, blah, 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 plod along, right? And so I have to go back to, you know, 30-second intervals to try and have a proper cadence and be light on my feet and do all the things that those runners who, you know, who run their entire career, who don't end up, you know, people say, oh, you'll end up with bad knees if you run. And yes, you will if you do it incorrectly. But if you do it correctly, you can run into your 90s, right? And so that's really my big goal is to run it properly. And it'll be interesting to see if it makes me faster, because everyone who's ever changed their running stride gets considerably faster. And so I could possibly PR my marathon, you know, in my 60s, which would be pretty cool.
Be very cool.
The races I've done with From Fat to Finish Line were Vegas half and Detroit half, which is really cool to have everybody come in my part of the world to do the Detroit International half. But
I love that marathon. Yeah. I would run that marathon.
Detroit?
Yes, because you could run into Canada, right? So I came out and supported Katie. So Rick went out and ran it with Katie. I was there and Cynthia, Rick's wife, Cynthia and I supported. Mm-hmm. And I just filmed a little bit for some of our after stuff. It was cool.
Well, if you come out here, you just stay with us. We have a spare room. So you
would
just
stay with us.
Literally 15 minutes from Canada, from where this starting line is. So we're very, very close.
Swim run's really fun. Despite cycling being kind of my favorite sport, there's just something very absurd about the swim run. And that you just, you know, you have to swim with your running shoes and run with your wetsuit on, and it's super weird and funny, you know, goofy. And those people are really, I mean, it started with a drunk bet which I think triathlon did also. The atmosphere at the swim runs are really, really, really cool. And they're just, you know, you run across the water and you, like I did one in Maine where you run across, it's the Casco Bay, the islands there, and you run across an island and then you swim to the next one and then you run across the other one and you swim to the next one.
Okay, see, you're like, it's weird and it's da-da-da, and I'm sitting here like, and now I have a new bucket list item. That sounds fantastic.
The world championships are in Sweden. It's the Otelo, and which means island to island in Swedish. And it's the archipelago. Is that how you pronounce them? The islands? And they just start at the bottom of the chain and get to the top or vice versa. It happens in September. And the first time they did it was like 22 hours or something like that. And I thought like, oh, are they swimming through the dark? And then I realized, oh, it probably doesn't get dark in September in Sweden.
That's true. That is true. And how old were you when you started all of this, this whole journey?
I was in my late 40s, I guess. I was in my late 40s when I filmed From Fat to Finish Line. I had jogged for fun and maybe to calm my ADHD. It started when I was in college in the 80s, and I'd probably put on like the freshman 15, and my grandmother, who very lovingly had said to me like, oh, honey, you're looking a little chubby. Maybe just switch to eating iceberg lettuce because it'll fill you up and you can lose some weight. I saw people jogging around campus. And so I, you know, started running a little bit, and I got into the zone at one point, and I'm kind of an anxious person, and it had calmed me down. And I solved a problem I had, you know? And so I would say from that, you know, my early 20s until my late 30s, I would say I solved all my problems on runs. And whenever I'd get either stressed out at work or gain a couple of pounds, I would start running again. And I worked in New York City for a while, and I joined the New York City Roadrunners Club. But I never really considered myself a runner. I never really cared about my times. I just now realized that Athlinks, Lifetime Fitness bought Athlinks, and they have gathered all the data from many, many runs and events. And so my half marathon times from the Brooklyn and the Queens half marathons from the 90s popped up. And I realized I've always been slow. Because I thought, oh, when I was 30, I probably could run an 8-minute mile. I don't know. But I couldn't. I ran like, you know, over, it was always over a 10-minute mile. So it was just something I did to get back in shape. Half marathons were fun. I gained a bunch of weight when I came back from New York and started working self-employment. And so it was 2007, and I decided to start running again. And I talked my best friend in at the time to start running again. And I was just doing some races, but nothing official. And hence the untrained for half marathon that inspired Jen, because Jen and I had worked together. We worked together for Paramount. I think we've known each other for over 30 years now. I think it was 1994 that we first started working together. It really wasn't until the group, because I always swore I would never run a marathon. A half was plenty. And then I just kept seeing all of these people in the From Fat to Finish Line group running marathons. And I thought like, ugh, I should probably run a marathon. I felt kind of like a slacker. And so for my 50th birthday, I ran my first marathon. And I actually also that same year did my first 70.3 triathlon.
In what, the same year? You trained for both.
Well, the marathon was in February, and it was the Surf City. So it's in Huntington Beach, and you run up and down the beach in Huntington Beach in February on Super Bowl Sunday. It was fun, but hard, because your first one always is really, really hard. And then the LA City Marathon, which was had been a lottery all the every year. This was 2014, and it was always a lottery. And for some reason or another, they're like, we have spots open. And that was like 2 weeks later. And my boyfriend at the time, who had decided to run the marathon with me, he's like, oh, we're trained. Let's do it. And it was on Valentine's Day in 2014. And there was this freak heat wave, and it was 94 degrees. And you're not still trained. You're basically recovering. It's a terrible idea.
Yeah.
And so after that one, I was like, I'm never running another marathon again. I've done it. But then I got intrigued by a longer distance triathlon. And so I did one in December. I did the one in Indian Wells in December. So I had plenty of time, you know, it was practically a whole year between those.
Sure.
And then I thought it was much more fun. Triathlons became much more fun after doing that 70.3. Although it did take me a long time to do another 70.3. It was the whole getting upon my 60s, I think, where like 2022, 2023, also probably the pandemic and not being able to do anything. I did 5 half Ironmen between December 2021 and May 2023. I ran 3 more marathons. I did that crazy swim in July 2023. I think I got, as many of us did, right? We got a little nuts when we were cooped up during the pandemic.
Well, I met Dave. Too much. Like, we both got nuts and went online dating, and now here we are.
That was a way better situation than over-exercising and spending too much money on races.
I did that too, though. I also did that.
I went backpacking in October with a couple of friends in the Channel Islands, which is the islands that I swam from. And it's a national park. They allow 30 people on the island. Nobody lives there. We backpacked for 2 days. We didn't see a single other soul. We had to carry our water. We hiked 10 miles a day, carrying water, sleeping on a beach with elephant seals. It was amazing. And the entire thing cost less than $200.
Whoa.
And so I am also now looking at adventure that doesn't necessarily mean racecation and thousands of dollars.
I am here for all of it. I cannot wait to follow that journey, and I'll probably sign up for some.
So stay tuned, because there's more adventure on the way.
You're going to put more items on my bucket list. That's amazing. Dave, is there anything that you wanted to ask?
I see this crazy, amazing amount of stuff that you're doing, and I just don't know where all the time comes from. It's amazing to me that you've done all that stuff in this world, and you keep going. It's just awesome to see. I love to see it. I love to see people find something they love and love to do it. Thank you for sharing it with us, because it's always inspirational to hear it, and it's always cool. I love it. It's great. No, I don't have any questions. It was an amazing journey to hear, and I thank you for being here with us.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. Shauna's been very inspirational to me since I met her online and then in Vegas. But
yeah, mostly. Vegas. Is From Fat to Finish Line, the documentary, is that still at a place that people can watch it?
It's not on Netflix anymore. That was a 3-year deal, but it is on Amazon. It was on Amazon Prime for a while, where it was, you know, like one of the regular Prime. I think it's still on Amazon Prime. I think you can watch it with commercials on Amazon Prime for free, or you can rent it for, you know, $1.99 or something. I mean, I can't believe it's over 10 years old now. So to answer Dave's question is, I think, you know, when you love something or something is exciting, you just make the time, right?
Yeah, I get that. I find that out with a lot of the people who we've talked to, they're making the time to do what they want. Like, when you want to do it, you'll make the time to do it. You'll find the way to do it.
And I'm pretty much kind of only doing one thing at a time. And then, so it's not like I'm doing all of these things all at once.
I get that.
I feel very called out right now. Thank you so much, Angela, for joining us. I really appreciate it.